Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing.
Mr. Levy, I came to this innocently.
Yeah.
Because I was looking in the old papers.
Yeah.
But I've become more fascinated by it, especially because your father was a Civil War veteran.
That's right.
And he had some special distinctions while he was in the service. What I'm wondering is, what I'd like to do with you today, and you spend a little time with me, is if you could tell me some things about your father, about what he told you about his early life.
I don't know anything.
Nothing at all. He never talked about it?
No, he never did.
Did he ever talk about his did he ever talk about his life in the Army during the Civil War?
Well, all I know was very rough, and he was he marched with the Army, and I think he got captured in Tennessee someplace, and he was on, I think it was an attack on Lookout Mountain, I believe.
Right.
And he was imprisoned, of course.
Right. In Andersonville.
Yeah, in Andersonville for
right.
many years. Everybody
right.
died of dysentery except me. He had dysentery, but he recovered.
Right. No, so he was a very strong person?
He's a very strong personality, yes.
I see. Where had he lived? Where did he live at the time that he went into the Army? Where was he living at that? He wasn't living
well,
in
Wilmington. Well, he was living in Illinois, no.
Illinois.
Yeah, Illinois.
I see.
I think that's where he is.
I see. How did he happen to come to Wilmington?
Oh, that was in later years.
Yeah.
Long after the war.
Yeah, but why did he come here to Wilmington?
I don't know why. He just came here. He looked for a good opportunity to locate someplace.
I see. I see. So, no, is any... What kind of business was he in here in Wilmington?
He had a pawnbroker.
I see. Where was his store located?
Jensen Market.
I see.
No longer exists that place.
I see. I see. And I understand that he was at the end of the Civil War, when Lincoln was assassinated, that he was chosen for the honor guard.
That's right. He was in the honor guard. He had charge of the funeral from Buffalo to Rochester.
Yeah.
It was.
Right. Now, was there any special reason why he was selected?
I don't know any of the circumstances.
But in other words, he considered this a very great honor in his life.
Yeah, that's right. And he'd come from Illinois and go to.
I see. No, you think because of the fact that they were both from the same state.
I think that might have had something to do with it. Decided he was. Sort of outstanding in Illinois.
I see. I see. When he came here to Wilmington, I understand that he was very influential in helping to found Temple Beth Emmet, the Temple of
that's
Truth.
That's right. I think that's true. There were two or three congregations that were preliminary to the founding of Beth Emmet.
Right.
But they were all very orthodox.
Right.
And he was reformed. And, of course, my father and I are both very modern, very reformed. Mm-hmm. And we didn't fit in with the orthodox ideas at that time. Now, I can tell you, I went to one of the old, I went, as a boy, I went to Six of French, I think.
Right.
And I hated it.
Yes.
For the simple reason that there was no sense of order or control. The boys were jumping in and out of the windows
right.
and raising hell all the time. And I wasn't used to that. I was going to public school where you had to behave.
Right. I see.
And that was part of the resentment of me and my family to the Orthodox religion. There was nobody that had any control. Everybody did as they pleased. When they read the ceremonial ritual, everybody read it in his own way. Without any idea of harmony or anything else. You know what, each
right.
prayed his own
right.
way, and there
right.
was 100 in the congregation, there were 100 different prayers. Boy, that wasn't what we were used to.
Right. Well, at that time, I guess this Reverend Residence was a Six in French?
No, Rendick was, there was another congregation down there.
Oh, there was another,
someplace down in there, I don't know where.
I see, well, so then your...
Then we withdrew shortly. I mean, my father withdrew, and I think my father really was instrumental in the stabbing, what is now known as a modern Reformed congregation. He's a founder of Bethlehem. He himself was.
I see.
Because he...
Were there any people helping him?
Yeah, after he got the thing started, he got a lot of other people there.
Right.
Ephraim.
Yes.
And
was there a man by the name of J. Harry Gordon? Was he at all involved?
He was. He was very indirectly involved. There was Ephraim.
Yes.
And people had a shoe store on. People named a Fuld, F-U-L-D, Fuld. And there was a back rack, B-A-C, H-R-A-C-H. And later, Greenbaum,
Greenbaum.
I can't recall him.
I see. So, in other words, they were the ones that really organized.
They got together, yes. And they had meetings at a place. The first meeting that I remember was at 8th and Orange. They had a room there at 8th and Orange, and I was a bar mitzvah at 8th and Orange.
At that place?
At that place. I think that's where I was. And then from there, they somebody rented that place or bought it or something, and they moved out to 504 Market Street, and they had on the second floor there. And they were there for quite some time, and then they got enough money together to start the place
on Washington Street. What kind of activities was your father involved in outside of the Jewish community? Was he involved in?
Oh, he was involved in various GAR things.
Oh, he was. That was the Grand Army of the Republic.
Grand Army of the Republic, yes, and things of that nature.
Well, let me ask you this: aside from Squire Weil, was your father the only? They were the only two Jewish Civil War veterans here in Wilmington.
So.
I've never seen any mention of any others,
I
assume.
Yeah. You see, I don't want to put on record, but...
All right, we'll turn it off.
You know what I mean?
Yes, well, I know.
And it was about a three-man operation that was establishing a temple, because they supported it. They went down there and swept it out and took care of it.
I see.
And hired rabbis and tried to get people to come and
Let me ask you this. Were you born here in Wilmington?
No, I was born in Auburn, New York.
Oh, I see. Your father was living?
Living in New York.
What was he doing there?
He had a clothing store there.
I see. Now, were you the oldest of the?
No, I was the youngest.
You were the youngest?
Yes.
I see. So, in other words,
I had a sister a little younger than I am.
Right.
But she's older.
I see. And the, are you the only living member of the family?
Yes, I'm the only one.
I see.
No, I have a sister still living, I think.
In Atlantic City?
Atlantic City, yes.
I know, so she's
the one.
That's the one that's written about here. I see. Were you at this wedding?
Surely.
Was?
I was about 8 or 9 years old.
Did this really happen?
It didn't happen just like it is there. This whole thing, it happened.
It did
that
happen.
They had a couple of rabbis come here
and
perform the ceremony. Rabbi Krautschuk would have come without any question.
Right.
But he couldn't get through on account of
the snow.
Transportation. And the same way had a man, Fisher, from Atlantic City, he was to come.
Right.
Nobody could get through. I will state this, that the conduct of this rabbi was very unethical.
Well, it seems that way.
I mean, it's just completely unethical in that he was mad, I think, because my father pulled away and started a Reformed congregation.
Yeah, but wasn't he the rabbi of the Temple of Truth?
He was supposed to be the rabbi, and he took it upon himself not to officiate. That's the part.
I see. Well, was this characteristic of this rabbi? Did he do other things like this? Well, why did they keep him so long?
Well, you know, you didn't get rabbis every day in those days.
I see.
You know, regardless of what a person's personal feelings are,
right,
sometimes you have to make concessions,
right, right,
for either for on account of publicity or for other reasons. You bend a little.
Right.
This guy did everything his own way.
I see. Now, he wanted to be the boss.
That's right. He was the boss, and he wouldn't listen to anybody. And I think he was quite orthodox by...
Later on in life, he did become quite orthodox.
Well, he was always.
He was always.
Yes, he was always very orthodox.
Because
that was part of the trouble.
Yes.
We were modern thinkers,
right,
and he was orthodox. You couldn't get along. Now, it's easy enough for a reformed person to concede a little to orthodoxy.
Right.
It's damn difficult for orthodoxy to concede a little for reform.
Well, that of course has always been.
That's the problem.
Right.
Yes, but it was very patent at this time.
Yeah.
The clash between the two, and I think at the time that was the beginning of the modern trend. Back in the 1900s, that was the beginning of the trend, where people started to think there was no future for orthodoxy in the world.
I see.
And I think one of my father was one of the leaders of that thought. And there were others who thought the same way, that if orthodoxy, you can't have orthodoxy, I still believe that myself, you're not going to have orthodoxy and Reform Judaism in the United States. One or the other's got to survive. That's what I believe.
Well, that's, of course, in those years, this was a tremendous
issue.
I guess it was a tremendous issue.
That's right, a tremendous issue. And that was the beginning of Zangwill, you know.
Right.
The
melting
pot and all that. And his idea was Zangwill's leanings were toward Reform Judaism.
Right, no question about that.
And there was lots of other articles and books and things published along the same line. I do not believe that you can send a boy to a public school, modern public school, not the way the schools are disjointed today.
Yeah, but you're talking about the way it used to be.
And learn the way the American way of learning is,
right,
and have them remain orthodox. The two things are clashed. Now, if you want to give a child, like my daughter,
right,
has three children, and she sends them to, they have a Jewish school,
yes,
you see. They go there and they learn Hebrew, they learn a lot of things, but they also go to public school. And it's just like me, I learned Greek and Latin when I
right.
went to school, right. And it's an embellishment to your education.
Right.
And that's the way I look upon knowing Hebrew and other things. It's an embellishment. It shows an educated person. But you don't have to live that kind of a life to be part of it.
But let me ask you this. What would you say, how would you describe the Jewish community in Wilmington beginning of this century?
I should say in the beginning, my father, our family,
yeah,
and the Backward Rack,
right,
the Fools, and
right,
these people were all very close. There were three or four families,
right,
were very close, and visited back and forth. They had a social life,
right,
that was very close.
I see.
And they all thought pretty much the same way. They used to visit back and forth, have coffee clutches, they call them. They
right.
visit from one house
right.
to another, and
right.
the whole family visited very frequently.
Now, was there any connection at all between your family and the Topkis family?
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
One of our dif- one of the difficulties that I don't like to maybe put this on record, but the I'm telling you about when I went down to Sixton and the old synagogue at Sixton,
right.
French,
right.
And they jumping in and out of the windows and all those raised hell there.
Yeah.
You have no idea. And there was no semblance of order. Nobody kept any. And I hated it. I don't mind telling you. I just detested it. The guys, you go to public school, you walked in, you behaved, and a period. You get down there and take the French,
right.
And you had to be
right.
A hellcat to get by.
I see. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think the Jewish community, why were Jews attracted to Wilmington in those days? I mean, was it really a good place to be? And was there a lot of business opportunity?
I think it looked to be like it was going to be a growing community.
Right.
That's all I can say. Why did anybody go any place today? It's pretty hard to analyze.
Yeah, I understand that.
Motive. There might have been some reasons, I don't know what they were.
I see.
You go where you think you can make a living, where you think it's good, and so forth. My father's always been active in what I might term the GAR movement.
Right. Now, what did they do, actually?
Well, they always had a big celebration at every national holiday in the
right.
year.
Right.
I remember hearing my father. When he was, I think when he was in Auburn, he was the same way, active in GAR movement. And every 4th of July, they used to shoot a cannon, 21-gun salute.
Right, right.
In this particular time, in those days, the shooting cannon took people who understood how to shoot a cannon.
Right,
you
right.
just couldn't go out and
right. So it really had to be soldiers. Had to be soldiers.
You got to have, sir, and this gun exploded, and I think a man got killed in it. One time.
That was up in Auburn, New York?
Or someplace, I don't think But I mean, he was always active in the parades and GAR movements, you know, and national celebrations.
So it meant that he was really, he had a lot of, aside from
a lot of patriotism, because he'd gone through the war
right.
and he was full of it, the
right.
same as the Legion today. I was in the First World War and I
right.
still have leaning toward
right.
this government. I don't owe any, I'll be honest with you, I don't owe any allegiance to Israel. My allegiance is the United States right here. This is the country I want to stay and defend. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm completely at loggerheads with Israel. I'm willing to donate
right.
to them and
right.
do what I can.
Right. Right.
But I don't have to identify. Now, the Zionists want you to identify yourself with Zion, with
right.
Israel.
Right.
I don't believe in that.
No, this is our country.
And I think anybody talked about double allegiance is crazy. And I, of course, I practice law.
Right.
And every once in a while I hear people say, make statements like this. Well, for instance, Conley.
Right.
I don't know that very good illustration. Don Conley, who was advisor to the
right,
president, he just
right,
quit.
Right.
Because you can't be a Republican and a Democrat at the same time.
Now that's true. That's
and
true.
I mean that's true of everything.
Right.
Every once in a while in a law case, a judge, you ask the judge to disqualify himself because of an interpersonal
right,
interest, you
right,
see.
Right.
And if it's a minor or small thing, the judge would say, well, I can disregard my feelings. Personally, I don't believe that anybody can disregard their feelings.
It's hard.
Right. You cannot do it. Now, that's just total risk to it. It's all right to kid yourself into thinking you can do it, but you cannot do it.
Right.
And I think that's what I mean by double
allegiance.
Double allegiance.
Let me ask you, did you ever hear of or ever know anything about a man by the name of Nathan Lieberman?
Oh, yes, I know him very well.
Who was he?
Nathan Lieberman lived at 810, on West Street.
Yeah.
At the 800 block.
Right.
It was a little small house, single apartment house.
Right.
He owned that,
right.
and he owned the house next to it, and he lived there.
Right.
He had a big clothing store at 5th and Market.
5th and Market, right.
Yeah, that's right. He was very prominent, very wealthy.
Now, was he also involved in the Jewish community?
He was. He was also. He belonged to this triumvirate that I was. I mean, three. I forgot about him. Yet.
Yeah. No, he was also involved in the founding of Temple of Truth.
Yeah, he donated always.
Well, let me ask you this. I have a note somewhere here that at the time of your father's death, you were living in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Had you lived?
I went to live with a brother of mine for a while.
I see. Were you practicing law at that time?
No, I wasn't practicing.
I see. Well, let me ask this. Did your father leave any kind of papers or anything that... I noticed here...
Well, I was just going to show you
this
that.
Is the famous telegram.
That's the famous telegram.
Right. This is when he got out of the prison
That's
camp.
Right, when he was
pretty.
You see, some of these people I don't know and never heard of, but I know they must have been in a family in some way. I think they were in-laws.
Oh, I see. No, it's your mother's.
That's right.
Your mother's
people. I think that was part of my mother.
Are there any other things of your father's?
I don't have anything else. Yeah, I have some others, but I gave them to my daughter. She has.
Oh, she has them.
Things.
Pictures.
Pictures and things. Yeah.
Pictures that, you know, of the family or pictures.
Pictures of my father, and different mementos of one kind or another.
Did any of them go back to the Civil War?
He had one there that's real nice. Goes back to the Civil War.
I see. Well, let me ask you this: what was your feeling when they had the breakaway, which ultimately became Beth Shalom? Were you here in Wilmington?
Oh yes, I was a small boy. Oh no! Wait! I wasn't here when they did the final break between Beth Shalom.
Right.
I don't know about that.
I see.
But well, there was at that time. My father was quite active in Beth Shalom or whatever his name was, and Aaron Finger was active, and Aaron insisted on it being Orthodox. And my father and a group insisted on it being reformed.
Right.
That's the whole thing. And neither one would give. Well, of course, I guess my father would have given a little.
Right.
You understand? Right. He was willing to. But they wanted it real Orthodox.
Right.
You see, my dad said, no, you got to modernize a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think myself that Beth Shalom has modernized quite a bit.
No question about that.
That wasn't known at that time.
They
still are, and I think both sides today are trying to reconcile themselves with modern economics and conditions.
I understand it was a Rabbi Mishkain.
Yeah, Mishkain was here.
Right.
He, bright man.
Yeah. He was the one that was, he fell off a horse. As I understand, he was really supposed to be a wonderful speaker.
He's a very fine speaker, and he was a very learned, fine type of rabbi.
What, did you know the man that it was his predecessor, Rabbi Levinger? Did you ever know
him? Yes, I knew him.
Yeah.
He's another bright man. His wife wrote poetry.
Yes, right.
Children's books.
Right, yeah. I don't know whether she's still alive or not.
I don't know. She was the last time I heard of her some years ago. She was still alive.
Yeah.
But I know Levinger, yeah. I think one of his relatives, I think, lived here until he died some time back, but he lived here quite a while back, Levinger.
Right.
He was a bright man.
Yeah. Were you at all involved in the early years in the YMHA? okay. Well, let me ask this: what did young boys do growing up here in Wilmington?
Well, I, for instance, when I grew up, I went to school, and all my activities were more or less connected with various school activities. They had, you know, they had baseball and football and all the modern things. I didn't know what the Jewish school. I didn't know what it was. I played football and baseball like other kids.
I see. So you were really very close with your school friends.
That's right. Extremely close.
What school did you go to?
I went to public school here, and I went to Friends School.
Oh, you went to Iceland. Were you the only Jew at the time in Friends?
Yeah.
Did that bother you at all?
No, I never had any trouble. I tell you, this is anti-Semitism. I hate to say it, but I think a lot of it's created by Jews themselves. They establish, they try to distinguish themselves from other people, and that won't do. But I think that that you create a lot of this yourself, and if you behave yourself and go along like other people, that's all. There's no problem. We lived in a non-Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
Every summer when summer would come when I was a boy,
right,
the whole neighborhood would have a picnic down in one of the parks.
Right.
Whole neighborhood. 200 or 300 people. And they'd all pass the word around there's going to be a picnic down Brandywine or out Brandywine Springs or someplace.
Right.
And they'd all make a picnic lunch, mm-hmm, pack baskets and so forth and go there and they'd share their lunches. And it was just like one family.
Right. So it was really a very close knit.
I would pretty much intend to it. I have friends today,
right,
that I raised with boys. I've got a friend of mine who's a good bit older than I am. He called me every once in a while, Harvey McCoy. We were kids together.
Right.
I have dozens of friends like that. Go way, way back. This man must be 90 if he's a day.
That's
95.
That's
we were in the same neighborhood.
Right.
Played together, and we didn't know what. He never talked to me about Judaism. I never talked to him about Christianity.
Right.
In fact, I went to another fellow named McCamby Mamley, was a Lutheran. They belonged to a church. It was on Tatnall Street, where the bowling alley is now, between 7th and 8th on Tatnall. That's where the church was. I don't know whether it's there now or not.
Right.
And the preacher was, it's a Lutheran church that's out on Pennsylvania Avenue now.
Right.
That church. I used to go down there and pump the organ. It had a wheel, a thing you turn, and it made wind. It bellowed and blew the organ. I used to go down there once in a while. And these kids, when they were up practicing in the choir, I was pumping the organ down there. And they never thought anything of it, and the preacher made just as much of me as he did the other kids. And yet I still remain a Jew. I went to everything was Jewish.
But did you say that you were bar mitzvah at Temple of
Bar
Truth?
I was bar mitzvah at 8th and Tatnall.
8th and Tatnall.
Yeah, they had a shul there.
Right.
On the second floor.
And this was the Temple of Truth.